This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Better Places, the podcast from Consilio where we talk about business, politics, planning and development. I'm Nathan Parsad-Wyatt and I'm joined this week by Councillor Jeff Barakoff, Cabinet Member for Planning and Economic Development in the City of Westminster. We discuss everything from emerging policy, the political landscape in 2024, and how he is finding the role nearly 2 years in. Well, I'm delighted to be joined, I think, for his third appearance on the podcast by Councillor Jeff Barakoff, Cabinet Member for Planning and Economic Development in the City of Westminster. Welcome back, Jeff.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Nathan. It's an absolute delight as ever.
Very good to see you. So we'll kick off. Here we are. May this year will mark the 2 year anniversary, I think, of you taking on this role as Cabinet Member for Planning in Westminster following that victory in 2022. How have you found the first 2 years? Do you feel you're getting all the things done that you want to get done and making change?
Yeah, I think we've made a lot of progress in the first couple of years, particularly on some of our priorities, like building more council homes, of getting a proper plan together to see how we can get to net zero at the council and the city by the 2030 and 2040, and putting the building blocks in place on planning policy to support some of these things, which I guess might be the focus of this particular conversation. But I think given, I suppose, the unexpected nature of our win, fortunately, we had done quite a lot of planning in terms of the manifesto and so on. So I think we were in a reasonably good place to hit the ground at a reasonable pace in May last year.
Yeah, as you point out, you know, we're now sort of getting into the stage where policies are starting to evolve and policies are starting to emerge. Obviously, I'm sure you'll agree, changing planning policy always takes longer than anyone would like it to. That's just part of the process. But let's just take a look into some of those policy changes. So when you first came to office, the City Plan Partial Review was launched, looking at those three key areas, affordable housing, the retrofit first policy, and looking at the site allocations for development across the city. And then we had the Regulation 18 consultation in 2022, and last year was kind of spent gathering representations on some of those policies. I just want to focus, as I'm sure you'll know, many of our listeners will be very interested in the retrofit element of this, which the draft policy went out for consultation last year. I mean, what's the feedback been on that? Have you had much from the informal consultation? I know people have been talking about it quite a bit.
Yes, we have. And I'm very pleased that we did that. So before we publish any policy wording, we've been at what you might say soft market testing with the real estate industry, but also other residents groups, community societies and so on, to see whether we were roughly in the right direction. And I think we're on the 18th floor of City Hall on Victoria Street. As we look out, we see thousands of commercial buildings, which are all heated by gas, with often leaky windows and roofs, not terribly well insulated. And if we're going to get the city to generate much less greenhouse gas, ideally zero, then these buildings all need to be retrofitted with the latest technologies. And so the main thrust of the policy is to encourage and support retrofitting of buildings, particularly commercial buildings. And to do that, we're going to introduce explicit support for that. So retrofit proposals will be explicitly supported for the first time. And officers will be able to take into account sustainability when determining questions of heritage. So this should be really powerful, particularly when it comes to putting an extra story or two on a block in certain locations, not everywhere. Obviously, there's places where you can't do that, to get the capital we need into regeneration, refurbishment of our office stock, which I think is essential. So that's the first thing, is to encourage retrofit, which I think is largely uncontroversial.
And I would agree, and I
think actually is very strongly supported.
Absolutely.
I think that the bit that is maybe new, and some of the listeners might be more interested in or more concerned about, is that we want to introduce a presumption for retrofit, so that if an applicant wants to demolish a building, they need to go through a series of tests to demonstrate why the objective cannot be met through a retrofit scheme. And that's the bit where we've been talking at length with the real estate industry. And it's been really helpful. We've had a lot of really good feedback. And the policies wording that we're going to be announcing, which we hope to do middle of March, mm-hmm. I think we'll take into account some of those concerns expressed to us. Not everything, but we hope to go some way to meeting some of the concerns there.
Excellent. So, because the policy at the moment, I mean, it's quite tough in terms of the language. It's the, you know, resisting the total demolition of buildings except in exceptional circumstances, which is obviously kind of understandable. Are you saying that maybe will be softened by the time the policy goes out for more formal consultation later this year?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I think we recognise that there will be occasions. So this is retrofit first, not retrofit only. There will still be clearly a number of reasons why the appropriate course of action is to demolish a building. And one of the ones that we are going to add to the list that we already had is the economic case.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If a building needs to be demolished in order to deliver strong economic benefits, then that's fine. But you need to demonstrate why those economic benefits cannot be delivered with a retrofitted solution.
Which I think is fair enough. It's saying, you know, actually, this shouldn't be the default position. It is, you've got to work through the options and demonstrate, as you say, why it is that you can deliver exactly the same thing by just doing some kind of retrofit.
Well, and again, if we're not helpful for your listeners particularly, but if we look out of the window that we're on the 18th floor in Victoria Street, behind us Portland House, which is being refurbished by Land Securities, looks lovely. Mm-hmm. We've got Gillingham House just down the road, which I think you worked on.
No, it wasn't one of ours.
One of yours?
Should have been.
other communications consultancies are available, which is the refurbished Securicor depot.
Yes.
We've got 1719 Rochester Row, which went through planning 2 or 3 weeks ago, which is a very big scheme of refurbishment. Number one, Victoria Street, the old Department of Business, Energy and Skills. Mm-hmm. Where, again, there's going to be a really interesting scheme to want to retain about 60% of that, I think, and extend it. So there's all manner of really good refurb schemes going on, and the technology and the techniques and architecture have come on leaps and bounds in the last 5 years even. So I don't see a presumption for retrofit in any way diminishing the capacity of the city to deliver, you know, good quality office space.
Yeah, because I think this is the message, isn't it, is a lot of people are concerned that by toughening up on these policies you end up deterring any investment in the city. And I suppose it's basically very positively putting forward the counter case to that, which is we do want investment, just maybe not in the way that we've always had it.
So yeah, clearly there's a lot of demand at the moment for high quality office space. We think that can be delivered primarily through refurbishing buildings that are already here. Mm-hmm. And that's also our experience as a landlord. So Westminster has quite a large corporate property portfolio.
Yeah.
So I sit on the property investment committee and I see business cases to refurbish office blocks, you know, in and around the city. The business cases are currently quite strong. I mean, I'll give you an example. We've got one building which is 13,000 square feet over six floors in the West End. We've spent £2.5 million doing it up. It's not wasn't a particularly appealing building previously, and we've got a strong pipeline of what I would regard as high quality mm-hmm. tenants who want to move in. So I think we don't need to have absolutely top quality office space in Westminster to attract high quality tenants because of the location and the benefits you get from being here and the ability to attract and retain staff and cluster with similar businesses. So I think we need high quality, but I'm not sure that if we can't deliver the absolute top that we're in trouble.
So that's quite interesting because, you know, that is not something the industry would really say. You know, you're obviously pushing for the best office space available in a very competitive market, both globally and within, say, Westminster, the city, Southwark, Camden, that central London space. But your view is because it's Westminster, as long as it's good enough, people will come and businesses will still continue to take up that space.
Well, people have been locating in Mayfair in accommodation which isn't particularly good for years and paying good money for it because it's Mayfair. So And you, with the refurbs, you get to some pretty decent quality. I guess what we are saying is that when we're looking at economic benefits of that balance between demolition and refurbishment, an economic benefit is not that the developer needs to make a certain figure deal work. That's not an economic benefit. You have to demonstrate that you're attracting a tenant that wouldn't otherwise come here, or delivering an economic benefit or a cluster or something that could only be delivered with this new building. And but of course, we appreciate there are configurations of buildings and typologies that are not fit for the future. I mean, the example I keep using is a multi-story car park, but we have quite a lot of those, actually.
So,
there's clearly going to be examples. And examples of buildings that are constructed in a way that means that they cannot be retrofitted for various reasons. So absolutely retrofit first, but not retrofit only.
And we talked about it in the context of offices there quite a lot, but obviously other uses are coming forward. And, you know, frankly, the shift to work patterns and, you know, whether people are using the office 5 days a week and all the rest of it has meant, you know, potentially there is less of a demand for the same level of office space as there was previously. So other options are becoming available, be that sort of life sciences or hotels or, you know, innovative leisure uses. Do you see it as easy or more difficult to sort of demonstrate the economic benefits that flow from those developments?
Well, I think it depends, and there's obviously always a balance to be taken. I think that your point about wider uses is very well made. If you look at the office market alone, you begin to think something's happening in Westminster different to other in London boroughs. But if you add in all the other uses, you find that, in fact, we've been approving more major applications than the City or Islington in the last financial year. And we delivered 162,000 square metres of refurbished floor space in Westminster last year. That's where the EPC rating has improved. So considerable flows of these things. But yes, there's massive demand for life sciences. And there has been massive demand for hotels.
Yeah.
So a lot of the, if you like, what might be the missing office market in Westminster has actually been office to hotel conversion.
Yeah. And, you know, that is quite difficult to achieve in policy terms in some areas.
It is, but it's clearly happened.
Yeah.
And if we want to crack down on short-term lets, which we would very much like to do, then that would create more demand for hotel space.
Yeah, yeah, naturally, yeah. Yeah. So I think the message there is that you would be pragmatic about different uses if it meets the other objectives of the council.
We are, and we see huge value in certainty. So at the moment, I accept that the policy framework that applicants are working in is not clear and consistent.
Yeah.
It's not been helped by Michael Gove's decision on Marks and Spencers.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Which set a political framing that the building was refused because of the environmental impact, when actually it was refused on heritage.
Yeah.
Which baffled me because, I mean, Orchard House is quite nice, but is it of national importance that merits the Secretary of State's intervention? I would say probably not.
Yeah.
So what we're hoping with our policy is to bring clarity and consistency. It might not be precisely what everybody wants, but hopefully the consistency will balance that out and everybody will know where they are. The other thing, obviously, I should mention is that when we come to when demolition is permitted, a system of carbon budgeting for that.
Yeah.
And that's been something that's been welcomed, I think, throughout the industry. Again, for clarity purposes. Clearly, if we're saying you need to deliver the new building for less than X tonnes of carbon per square metre, there's going to be an argument about what X ought to be.
Yeah.
And there are people much better qualified to me than say what is a reasonable number for X.
Yeah,
but the framing of the thing, I think, is very widely supported. Again, it should bring consistency.
And one last one on the retrofit piece then. Timelines. So you mentioned earlier that March was when you were hoping to start the consultation for the next iteration of the policy.
I mean, as you know, local government largely shuts down for the 6 weeks of the short election campaign for the mayor.
Yeah.
And we plan to announce this before that 6 week election campaign.
There you go. Before the 18th of March.
Before the 18th of March.
Okay, excellent. Moving on to sort of other policy matters. So we've had the planning obligations and affordable housing SPD, which provides guidance on a number of issues, but income thresholds for intermediate housing, affordable workspace, and of course, carbon offsetting. Is the SPD on track to be adopted in early 2024?
Yes, imminently.
Okay.
So we are days away from that. It's been consulted on for some considerable time, and that's because we wanted to give it the consideration we felt it deserved, particularly around the carbon offset. Because
this is the most controversial element of it.
So that's money that is paid if a new building does not deliver more than 35%. Carbon reduction from Part L of the building regs, if I get that correct.
You've clearly learned so much about planning in the 2 years you've been doing this job.
I know. So we're going to increase it. I think that's clear because the level didn't reflect the cost of offsetting in Westminster, but we have heard what the industry was saying.
Okay.
So we do intend to offer a considerable discount on the carbon offset for buildings that are heated with electricity.
Okay.
And since the majority of new buildings are without electricity, I think that should go a fair way to meeting some of the objections that we had.
So probably by the time this podcast goes out next week, this policy will be out there already. So that's interesting. Some reassurance on probably the most challenging part of the policy, which was that offset fee per tonne, which was a significant uplift. Yeah. For those who don't know, it was £95 and the proposal was £880 a tonne. So you're saying that could change by the time this goes out? No.
Well, the headline figure won't change, but there'll be a big discount if you're using electricity.
Okay, understood. All right, excellent. So then just on other policy matters, public realm SPD coming out and the environment SPD, what are they sort of looking to achieve and what are the timelines on those?
So the public realm SPD will replace the Westminster Way.
Okay.
So and we plan to produce a shorter document, more principle focused. And the environment SPD looks at a number of things that I suppose the big one is flooding, because we're doing a whole new flood risk assessment and we need policy that backs that up so that new developments don't add to the flood risk, ideally are able to mitigate the flood risk with things like suds and similar. And biodiversity net gain.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at whether we can go further than the 20% that's mandated by the government, bearing in mind that in a very urban location, a lot of sites have no biodiversity. So 20% more is not very much. Well, it's like you've got 12 blades of grass rather than two or something. So we're looking to see whether we can go further and in what way.
Okay, that all sounds interesting, and that's all set to happen this year in terms of the consultation.
That will be launched after the election period.
Okay,
so
working our way around the mayoral election.
Yeah.
And just last couple on policy, really. Is it still the intention to review the whole city plan ahead of the next local election, so 2025?
So we will do a review of the city plan in 2025.
Okay.
As you pointed out earlier, these things take time. So I would not know at the moment how long it would take to run that review.
Yeah, okay.
But I certainly want to start in 2025.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of people, I'm sure, it's the thing about city plans, by the time they're fully implemented, you have to go back round again and change them. But I'm sure there's a lot of people who, you know, would really appreciate feeding into that process and what's worked about it and what hasn't worked. So
well, absolutely. And there are some things I've got in my head, but no doubt your listeners also will have things that they might like to amend or change. And don't tell me yet. Wait until 2025.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, just on planning process then. So one of the first things you did when you came to office was set up the design review panel. I know previous administrations have talked about this for a long time. Pretty significant to have one set up in Westminster, and obviously some very established and respected names from across the industry and communities and all over the place forming that DRP. Has it been meeting frequently? How's it sort of working and fitting into that, you know, the application process?
I think fairly well. So it meets in principle every month.
Right.
So we have a schedule, so there's a date agreed in advance when it's going to meet. And applicants are generally fairly willing to fit in with that schedule.
Mm-hmm.
The first ones were One Victoria Street, we just mentioned, but also the new pavilion at Lord's. We had it look at the site allocation, so our four site allocation locations, it looked at those, which again was very helpful. So it's good to get another set of eyes on this. And I think in terms of essentially what the applicants get, which is for not very much money, a day's free consulting from industry experts and luminaries, it's actually really remarkably good value for money.
Yeah.
And we've not yet had a case that's worked through to committee with the the recommendations of the DRP. But I mean, I think a good innovation, and pretty much every other London borough's got one, I think, apart from the city. And for something that is cost neutral, I think it's good innovation.
Yeah, I mean, Westminster was always the outlier in not having one. I think, you know, as you point out, many other boroughs, they've been established for many years. It's interesting you say it's reviewed the site allocation, so it's actually looking at your own policies and things coming forward as well as a sort of third-party review mechanism in a way.
Yes, we will have it look at things, not so much planning policy so much probably, but certainly large public realm schemes.
Yeah.
So had it been established when we were doing the initial Oxford Street work, for example, I'd have had it look at Oxford Street.
Yeah.
So we'll have it look at major public realm schemes. So one of the site allocations is St Mary's Hospital.
Yes.
Which is a massive thing. So it's been really helpful to get their perspective on it.
Mm-hmm. Just thinking about the planning department then, I'm taking a look at the draft budget that I think you will have agreed it by the time this goes out, but I think it's set to go to Cabinet next week. And it looks like there are some fairly sizable savings that need to be made within the growth planning housing department overall. I don't want to get into the detail of where you think those savings will come from necessarily, but just I did see that you're projecting that you would be able to make a saving effectively from digital automation opportunities within the planning department. I mean, you're a bit of a tech guy. How do you see that actually taking place?
Well, if you look at the life of a planning officer, quite a lot of it is spent not being a planning officer, quite a lot of it spent moving information from one software application or spreadsheet into another one, and taking in huge amount of unstructured data from the applicants. So everybody sends in their carbon assessments and their tree surveys and all the other hundreds of documents, all in a different format.
Yeah.
And the officers have to then shuffle it into a common format, and the scope for error, obviously, but it also means the senior management spend quite a lot of time checking that planning officers have done that correctly, and then into committee. I mean, it's a huge admin.
It's a lengthy process.
It's a huge admin job, which goes on top of actually what people are skilled in, which is
reading the reports.
Yeah. interpreting them, communicating, and coming to a judgment. So I think there's massive opportunities for artificial intelligence to suck in all this structured, unstructured data and deal with it. And I'm particularly excited about that application because it's all in the public domain.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no issues around GDPR because the planning portal is
available.
So I would urge any entrepreneurs in the AI space listening to this podcast, point your robot at the Westminster Planning Portal and tell me something I don't know.
Yeah. I think there's huge opportunities there. You're right, because it's such an inefficient process at the moment, and every local authority does it slightly differently. And, the way the GLA takes information is also different. And it does feel that if that could be standardised and, as you say, done by some kind of AI or large language model, it would be hugely beneficial.
But so some of the questions like, how much affordable housing is proposed on that site there, the one I think is called this site, but actually might be called some other name in the database, and it's all very I think there's massive opportunities. Hopefully it'll allow the team to spend their time doing what they do best.
Maybe Westminster can be the trailblazers in this space over there. Well, actually, very few local authorities are dealing with the volume of applications, right? So it's a good opportunity to
although we did mention the volume of major applications has fallen because of Brexit, and then it's fallen because of the pandemic and so on. The volume of minor applications and listed building consents has continued as ever,
to go up. Yeah. Interesting. So let's move on from planning and talk about, we touched on it earlier, just some of there's some big transformation projects actually happening across the borough. We've had, as you mentioned earlier, the Oxford Street project, but also Regent Street, Piccadilly Circus and Haymarket are having a new public realm programme, along with the High Street consultations, like Maida Hill. Can you just give an update on public realm projects, how you see these these going? How, you know, are they achieving the kinds of things you want to?
So there is a lot going on. So Oxford Street, we're working on with the new West End company. Mm-hmm. That the first, so we're going to be doing some sampling next week. There'll be some granite going in the pavement next week to see what it looks like. We'll be starting the enabling traffic works next month in Fitzrovia to make Wigmore and Mortimer two-way. Mm-hmm. And we hope to begin work in Oxford Street in the autumn, subject to the final commercial agreement with NWEC.
Yeah.
So we have to get to like contracts to make to, before we can start. And I appreciate there's 60 organisations as part of their funding group. So that's a real challenge for NWEC to get. To get that done. Once that's done, then we can crack on. Regent Street working on with the Crown.
Yeah.
And that will follow Oxford Street. So although we're making good progress with the planning and so on, I think it would be I don't think anyone would thank us if we were digging up Oxford Street and Regent Street at the same time.
No, probably not.
and then, yeah, there are some other public realm schemes. You mentioned Maida Hill. There's three smaller projects in the North Paddington area, at the Maida Hill Market, which is underway at the moment. There is what we're calling Queen's Park Canal Side, opposite Queen's Park Library by the canal, where we're tidying up that park and putting in some new public realm, and by St Mary Mag's Church, mm-hmm. the other end of the canal at Westbourne. So there's a whole bunch of things going on, and you know, more coming down the line, I hope.
Yeah, very good. And look, the other thing that you sort of launched, I think probably since the last time you appeared on the podcast, was the Fairer Westminster and the Fairer mm-hmm. Economy strategy. And obviously, you know, the first time I remember us discussing it, that there was some kind of policy in this space mm-hmm. to try and connect the private and public sector to deliver those opportunities. I mean, how do you feel the Fairer Westminster aim is going, and how's it been perceived by wider stakeholders?
Well, let me give you an example of something we did last week, which I think is bang on where the strategy needs to take us, which is we had the finals of a competition called the Digital Dash, which was a competition for local young people, teams for local young people, to design a new digital product mentored by some of the great businesses located in Paddington. Mm-hmm. So Cognizant, Finastra, Optum and Visa. And it's been terrific. We did the finals at the Houses of Parliament. The young people learnt more than they ever thought possible. They gained in confidence. The employers thought, "Hell, I'd like to hire these people."
Yeah.
Who wouldn't necessarily have thought about applying for these jobs. So, we have fantastic companies in Westminster and in the Paddington area, particularly, are jutting onto areas of quite severe social deprivation and very good schools. So we have, you know, people who are don't have. Maybe the connections and network, but they've got the brains and the academics, and we can definitely put them together with employers. And that would be precisely what I think a fair economy plan to Westminster would be delivering. At a time when employers tell me the single biggest problem they have is recruiting talent.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is across the board, isn't it? So it's it makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, certainly all of our clients, you know, many, many people who listen to this podcast will be up for that and connecting with the council to achieve it. Because half of it is we've got this really good idea, but we don't actually know where to go and we don't know how to connect the two sides. So the council facilitating that is a really positive thing.
Yeah, and if anybody listening is not yet part of our responsible business network, please join that, and that'll ensure that we keep you abreast of all the opportunities and programs that we're doing, and allow you to run your social value programs and your mentoring and so on right here in Westminster with local people.
Very good. Just want to ask a couple more questions. One is, do you think tax-free shopping will be back by the end of the year? I know the Chancellor has supposedly launched a review into whether or not it actually has brought in any money to the Treasury, or whether it's had a negative effect, which I think those of us in Westminster would say it probably has. And you've long called for it to be reinstated.
Yes. So do I think he will? I think he probably will introduce tax-free shopping. And I think the reason is because it will deliver economic growth and extra tax revenues at no cost to the public purse. So it's a bit of a free hit, I think.
Yeah.
And I noticed that Italy, a couple of weeks ago, reduced the threshold for tax-free shopping down from €140 to €70 purchase.
Right.
And that comes with an economic modelling from Italy that says if we do this, we'll actually generate more tax revenue and more jobs by having more tax-free shopping. So I mean, I think Jeremy Hunt will put it in the budget because why wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, if the Chancellor's listening, it's another ask from Westminster's cabinet member to put it back in.
Not just me. All central London boroughs have signed up to this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, as I said, it makes a lot of sense. Just on the politics before we wrap up then. So big year for elections this year. We've mentioned that we'll have a mayoral election and the impact that will have on local authority and the lead up to it. But we've got the mayoral and GLA elections happening in May and the general election happening sometime this year. Prime Minister said second half, could be any time. And actually, you know, we've had the news recently that both Nicky Aitken, the Conservative MP for the Cities of London and Westminster, stepping down. Karen Buck, MP for Westminster North, I believe, is not seeking re-election this time round. Do you think it could be a clean sweep for the GLA seat, the mayoralty, both MPs?
Well, I need to pay tribute to Karen for a very, very long service and very, very positive service on the doorstep throughout north of Westminster. You'll see the impact of her tenure and the good things that she's done. Politics in the right way.
I would agree with that.
And never getting personal. Which I think is very important, concentrate on policy. And I mean, Nikki, similarly, I think it's a shame that she's felt that she doesn't want to continue. I think her heart's in the right place and she works hard and done a lot of good stuff for the city as well. What that does mean is that, yes, I think it was likely that Rachel Blake would win the two cities, and I think now it's fairly certain that she will.
Yeah.
Will Sadiq win the mayor? Yes. Not least of which because the Conservative Party hasn't taken the contest seriously by putting up a sensible candidate. I think it's important that in adversarial politics, both sides do put up sensible candidates. And GLA, London West Central, yes, based on all the other votes that have gone on, that also should be Labour. But I appreciate that we're speaking on the 15th of February. Anything might happen between this and this podcast going out and between the podcast going out and the elections. Who the hell knows what's going to happen?
Yeah. One thing we all know is politics is extremely unpredictable. When do you think the general election will be?
I think that they're going to logically November, but that runs you into the American election, which might be a difficult time to have it. So it depends on the. I would have thought if the Conservatives get a budget bounce,
well,
then they might go for it.
You think they'll just go for it straight away?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Maybe an election will be called by the time this podcast goes out. Just to wrap up, then, looking beyond 2024, we've just said it's possible that essentially Labour are in control at virtually every level of government. What do you see that election going, looking forward to 2026 when you're seeking re-election and Westminster Labour say, vote for us again. How do you see the policies and projects that we've kind of discussed today shaping that future city for residents, businesses, the electorate as a whole?
Well, I think as we, I would hope that by 2026, an incoming Labour government has managed to find the funding for local authorities that they so badly need. Because we're all facing a real crunch. Some councils faster than others. So Westminster is relatively fortunate. We're probably about 12 months behind other councils in facing the real issues from particularly on temporary accommodation, which is causing havoc in budgets up and down the land. So I'm hoping that some of this stuff gets fixed. And I'm hoping that an incoming government will also be able to do something about the structural waste in the public sector, like the £35 billion a year spent on housing benefit, the way that we pay for adult social care, the way we pay for children's care and so on, is really very, very wasteful indeed. We could get much better results for less money if we gave some thought to how we structure the way the public services are run, in my view. But coming to 2026, I would hope that we still have the lowest council tax in Britain, which we do. We have clean streets, which we do. And we've been able to deliver some social justice as well.
Very good. Well, the first two would be on Conservative leaflets in years gone by. The third one, probably not so much. But anyway, that's the election pitch for 2026. Got a few elections in between now and then. But Councillor Barraclough, Jeff Barraclough, thanks very much for coming on the podcast and for joining us again.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it from us. Thanks for listening to another episode of Better Places. You can find our back catalogue of episodes by visiting conciliocomms.com/podcast. And don't forget to like and subscribe on whatever platform you listen on. Bye, 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 bye.